You're listening to Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Kendra Carr. The Northern Michigan Asylum opened 135 years ago Monday. It closed in the 80s, going on to be redeveloped in the early 2000s. Today, it stands as the Village at Grand Traverse Commons. The Village tour guide, Vanessa Vance, spoke with me about the history of the hospital. The Traverse City Regional Psychiatric Hospital opened its doors today in 1885 after organizing in 1881. What can you tell us about that early time at the hospital?
Well, the hospital has served its purpose over its entire life. It served the 39 counties of the northern Lower Peninsula. And there were already two asylums operating in those early days, one in Kalamazoo and one in Pontiac. And this hospital was built not only for the citizens of all those counties, but to bring people back. Those other hospitals were overcrowded. So there was a built-in population right away. On the day it opened, November 30th, the first patient was actually brought by Sheriff John D. Dunn. He was a citizen of Traverse City. But on the same day, 43 patients left the Eastern Michigan Asylum in Pontiac and traveled by train to Traverse City, accompanied by 13 hospital personnel that were coming here to work. And it was a thoroughly modern facility. It was a Thomas Kirkbride modified design. The architect was a guy named Gordon Lloyd, who's a famous architect in Detroit. It was a modified Kirkbride design, as they called those batwing asylums. The buildings actually stack back, and if you look back on the top from them, they look like the wings of a bat. They're trying to let as much light in as possible. So it was a very, you know, kind of modern design. The halls were wide and very tall and well lit. It was a beautiful building. It was built to house 500 patients. Very modern for its day. It was the first building owned by the state to have electric light. And it had an elaborate ventilation system. They were trying to push a lot of air through it. They thought bad air was responsible. Bad air or atmospheric conditions caused insanity or other illnesses.
Did it have a different philosophy for treating patients than some other hospitals at the time?
Well, it followed Thomas Kirkbride's philosophy. Thomas Kirkbride was an architect and physician, and he actually wrote a lot of stuff down in his various annual reports. He thought the places ought to, you know, be cleaned up. The grounds ought to look like English gardens. He was certainly an advocate for, you know, treating patients with kindness, with a pleasant expression of face, you know, as they were people. I think it was a very modern institution in those days. I mean, the alternative might have been the county almshouse where, you know, your treatment was probably marginal at best. I'm sure if you were brought there in 1885, on this day in 1885, and you had been in a county situation, your life was going to change dramatically for the better.
And why do you say that?
You know, Thomas Kirkbride was an advocate for the mentally ill or the insane, and the first superintendent, Dr. James Decker Munson, was certainly an advocate of Thomas Kirkbride's philosophies. And, you know, he used to talk about, you know, how the staff should interact with the patients. You know, they should be pleasant, and, you know, they should try not to use restraints. They should be as humane as possible. They didn't have much at their disposal, and the hospital actually adopted a philosophy called beauty is therapy under the guidance of James Decker Munson around 1900. He established the second largest arboretum in Michigan on the historic front lawn. So they were doing the occupational therapy. They had a farm there. They operated a successful farm there starting in 1886. Patients were expected to work. They were kind of self-sufficient in a very remote location here in northern Michigan.
So it was like its own community.
It truly was. At one time, that facility even had its own zip code, and it certainly had its own power plant that provided steam power, steam heat, and the electrical power was that way the entire life of the asylum. I remember the power plant operating when I was a kid there.
Exactly. Now, you aren't just a tour guide for the village. Your father was the medical superintendent in the 60s and 70s, and you lived on campus. Can you tell us what it was like to grow up there?
Well, I was initially terrified of the place. Psychiatrist kids have very active imaginations. My friends and I had written stories about such places, you know, based on what we read in Mad Magazine and other ridiculous stuff. And those fears turned out to be completely unfounded. My encounters with patients weren't exactly normal, but they weren't something to be feared. I never thought the patients to be dangerous. It was a very lively place. A lot of the patients, you know, they'd want to talk and maybe try to bum cigarettes. Sometimes we'd throw the Frisbee around, and there used to be a miniature golf course near the old Willow Pond. We used to play miniature golf with patients occasionally.
And your father also felt very connected to the patients as well when he was the medical superintendent. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, my dad, he walked into a very well-run hospital. But my dad was an excellent hospital administrator and crackerjack psychiatrist. You know, I'd walk around with my father there. He was adored by the patients. I know he respected them and took his job very, very seriously. He tried to give them the best quality of life that they could have, I mean, even if they weren't leaving the institution. And the patients did throw him a retirement party when he left at the canteen there where Cup of Joe is now, and actually passed the hat for retirement gifts for my father, and they put pieces of hard candy and sticks of chewing gum and loose cigarettes all in the hat. He was very touched.
I bet. So to you, what is the historical significance of the psychiatric hospital in Northern Michigan, especially when there are so few hospitals like this nationwide?
I think the historical significance is, you know, the impact on the community. I mean, this was not originally Traverse City's largest employer, but it became Traverse City's largest employer and put nearly $300 million in salary into our local community through the life of the institution. You know, it was a true industry here in town, and I think it's wonderful that they've restored the buildings that they could to the extent that they have, especially the central unit or Building 50. It's an amazing thing to have in our community. I think a lot of people come there expecting it to, you know, be kind of a sad place or a place where a lot of people were tortured, and I don't think that's true at all. Generally, people, patients there had excellent experiences and outcomes that were as good as possible, and, you know, people should know about the historic relevance of those buildings and how sparse they are. Very few of them have been saved, and it's a wonderful place.
Thank you so much for speaking with me.
You're so welcome.